This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. A group of scientists at Yale University recently concluded that Haiti's devastating cholera epidemic could have been prevented through the use of a modest medical kit valued at about $2,000. The United Nations program in Haiti, which has been held responsible for triggering the deadly outbreak, could have equipped its soldiers with a simple screening test and preventative antibiotics. Now it will cost at least $2 billion to deal with the consequences. Haiti's cholera epidemic came within months of the devastating 2010 earthquake, impacting more than 750,000 people and killing at least 9,000. How that outbreak began, how it became politicized, and what lessons can be learned from it are told in a new book by my guest, Ralph R. Frerix. He is a professor emeritus of epidemiology at UCLA. He's been a consultant to many international agencies, including the UN, the WHO, USAID, and the CDC. And he is the author of Deadly River: Cholera and Cover-Up in Post-Earthquake Haiti, which he joins me to discuss. Welcome to the show, Ralph.
Well, thank you very much, Sonali. My pleasure to be here.
So first, let's talk about the fact that this outbreak came within months of an earthquake. We shouldn't be terribly surprised that an infectious disease would spread like wildfire in a country so poor and so devastated, because whenever you have such disasters like these earthquakes, an infrastructure in an already poor country is destroyed, diseases will spread, right? Through water contamination, through the, you know, through various means. So, I mean, how incredibly surprising was it that an infectious disease spread in Haiti?
You might suspect that exactly what it is that you said, that is that big earthquake, disease comes to Haiti, spreads widely and so forth and all. But it turns out that the narrative that you suggested is not true. Haiti, in fact, has been a country for a long, long time. And according to historians, has never had cholera. Cholera has never come to this country before. After the earthquake, that dramatic earthquake that devastated the country in January of 2010, it did indeed leave the southern part of the country in ruins. But the cholera that appeared started in the central part of the region, outside the earthquake zone. And the spread, the dramatic explosive spread that occurred, was completely unrelated to the earthquake, but rather due to some circumstances we discovered in the, that Renaud Perrot, the disease detective, featured in the book that he discovered.
So in other words, reading your book, what I was reminded of was the arrival in the so-called New World of Westerners that brought smallpox to a place that had never seen smallpox before and ended up decimating the Americas. I mean, is that the sort of lens through which we should view Haiti, that it was subjected to, or exposed to rather, a strain of a disease that had never been, you know, that never really taken root there, a disease that now we know originated in the Himalayas, in on the opposite side of the globe in Nepal?
Well, Haiti has been an independent country since 1804, but it's always been a relatively poor country. Early on, they had abolished slavery, so there were no slave boats and whatnot coming from Africa where cholera was a problem. And somehow or another, they avoided this disease for the longest time. And the only military, the only outsiders that were there, arrived in 2004, coming in as UN peacekeepers. The UN felt that the stability and order were essential in Haiti, and they set up a system where they would have these peacekeeping troops there, and they got extended and extended again and extended again, and they're still there now. And the they're also training police in Haiti. So they're now all of a sudden involved with both police and with these outside troops that come in. So the UN doesn't pay very much. The UN pays $1,200 a month to these soldiers when they come in from various countries. And for Nepal, $1,200 a month is quite a bit of money.
So they were eager to come here, but it turns out that Nepal is a country where cholera flourished. And they had a cholera outbreak a few months, that started a few months before they left for Haiti. And we feel that they brought this cholera to Haiti, and that the Haitians, being as poor as the Nepalese, were, as you say, quite susceptible to this.
So tell us about this disease detective that the Haitian government brought into Haiti to determine where the cholera came from. Renaud Pirot, who was this French epidemiologist, or basically somebody who was very familiar with cholera, and I understand had had quite a bit of success in another arena, helping to eradicate cholera.
He did. It's actually, we talk about eliminating cholera, not eradicating. Eradicating is when it's a worldwide process, but elimination
I
is when
see.
it's a country-specific process. And he has had success with that. Renaud really got called to come in when it became apparent that the epidemiologists who were working in Haiti, namely those with the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention from the American side, and there were people there, advisors from WHO, from the Pan American Health Organization, and the like. And all of them, right at the beginning, said, well, this epidemic started, but we have absolutely no idea why it came here. We recognize that it had never been in Haiti before, but we just don't know the source. And we're too busy with other things, with taking care of the victims and helping with the treatment and so forth and on. We're too busy to worry about the source. And in fact, we may never discover the source. So all of
In
this
a way,
went
had they
out
sort
to
of
be.
set themselves up ahead of time to not really dig too deep into the fact that soldiers from all over the world were in Haiti?
Not only set themselves up ahead of time, but told newspaper reporters
Hmm.
about it and widely broadcast their opinions. So the Haitian government, somewhere along the line, and early on in the line, decided that they would reach out to their former the country that was they were formerly a French colony, and so they decided to reach out to France and see whether they had an epidemiologist who knows something about cholera could come in and tell them exactly how this epidemic came to their country and why it spread in such an explosive manner throughout. What was the reasons for that? So Renaud Perot, who's in Marseille, he got the word. He's a fellow who's had quite a bit of experience in Africa and such with cholera. And he was taking care of his personal business. And 2 weeks later, he shows up in Haiti ready for work.
And he tried to determine where the outbreak began. Why was it important? I know this might sound like an obvious question, but why is it important to determine where it all started? You mentioned that it started in a different part of Haiti than where the earthquake hit, but determining where the outbreak began, how does that help in eliminating it?
You have to think about this in relationship to other detectives. Epidemiologists are known as disease detectives, but we typically approach things similarly to what you expect detectives in a police force. And say there had been a mass shooting, and there are bodies everywhere, and some people were injured, some were dead, and so forth and all. And the police come in and they say, oh, you know, our first thing is that we have to take care of these victims. And paramedics come in and they provide health care and all. And then lo and behold, the detectives come in. And the detectives look around and says, well, I'm too busy to tell you about who started this, who was the perpetrator of this, who was the initial shooter and such. I have no idea, and we may never be able to find out. Well, the public would be outraged. The same way in epidemiology. We need this kind of initial information to plan out what to do about the outbreak, what to do about the epidemic, and we need it to prevent similar examples in the future, or similar outbreaks in the future.
So what did Renaud Pirot find, and how quickly did he conclude that it was likely the UN and the Nepal contingent of the UN?
The theory had been floated by a couple of enterprising reporters. And one of them, Jonathan Katz, wrote an article that appeared in Montreal in French. Perot, before leaving France, read this French article from out of Montreal. It was an AP feed and learned about the hypothesis that these Nepalese peacekeepers had come into Haiti and had perhaps brought cholera with him. He put that in the back of his mind. When he showed up in Haiti, he interviewed a lot of different people, and they all said, oh, it was just a rumor, ignore that rumor, you know, there's nothing to it, and so forth. It's just these Haitians trying to rise up their irritation against the UN and such. But Perrault kept it in mind. Then as time went on in his first week, after he'd done his the greetings and meeting people and getting the lay of the land and such, he decided to drive out to the area where the UN base was situated, near a town called Mirebalais. And the Mirebalais is in the interior of the town, in the country, right by the Artipinite River. So in going out there, he joined some Haitian colleagues who were also epidemiologists. They went out and they did some initial surveillance around the base. They couldn't go in the base, but they did some surveillance around the base and they saw what the situation was. And then in going up to Mirebalais, they stopped at the local hospital that was there. And in that hospital, that was maintained by the Cuban Medical Brigade, doctors from Cuba. And the Cubans, besides providing a good quality medical care, is that they turned out to be wonderful statisticians. They kept good records, very good records on patients. So they shared these very good records with Perrault and his colleagues. And lo and behold, the first cases recorded in Haiti had showed up at their hospital, and they had details about it. And so that right away clued him in that this hospital, which was quite close to the base, that's where things started.
So this should have been a fairly cut and dry story, right? Okay, you bring in this leading disease detective. He determines that this is where the disease originated, and that should help you, you know, eliminate it and also deal with any kind of financial consequences. But why didn't that happen? How hard did not just the United Nations, but even the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention fight Renaud, Perrault, and others in owning up to the reality?
This is perhaps the most startling of it all. You would think is that if you sit there and do an outbreak investigation, people would indeed be happy with the fact that you're gradually solving the problem, finding out exactly what happened and such. But it turns out that the incriminating individuals were UN peacekeepers. And the UN has kind of, Haitians have kind of a love-hate relationship with the UN peacekeepers because they do keep stability and order that's there. They don't really have an independent troops or independent police force. So these UN soups are keeping order in the country. And many people worry is that somehow or another, if the bad rap that comes from them bringing cholera would all of a sudden force them out of the country, that it may have a devastating impact on Haiti, and it might have a devastating impact on the ability to use these UN peacekeepers in other countries as well. So there was a pushback. They said, no, let's push back. Is that really the epidemic didn't start where you folks say. It started way in the other side of the country in a coastal town named St. Mark, and that it was really as a result of an environmental alteration of the Vibrio cholera bacteria, not that some human brought it. And so we had these two theories, an environmental theory, which is a theory of innocence, that somehow or another this started and just rose from the water, versus the theory that there was somebody culpable, which is the human activity theory. And Perrault was investigating the logic of these two theories.
And I understand that at some point he wrote an article about this for The Lancet, one of the most prestigious medical journals, and they turned it down?
Yeah. It was the oddest thing, you know, was that when the next epidemic that followed this cholera one, which was the great epidemic of Ebola in West Africa, that I'm sure you know something about, and they had almost the same number of deaths that they did in with the cholera one. When Ebola, the epidemiologists who were in Guinea, it started in a little small country in West Africa called Guinea, epidemiologists there saw it, they linked up with the Doctors Without Borders, immediately wrote it up, sent sent an article to the New England Journal of Medicine, which published it online a very few weeks after the thing began. Now, we have the preceding epidemic, cholera. Perrault does almost the same thing, gets it together, works with the Haitian counterparts, get a detailed analysis of what it is that happened, sends it in to an equally prestigious journal, Lancet, even gets opinions from Lancet, of course, that we'll put it through in a fast track and such. But all of a sudden they read it. They saw that the UN was the incriminated agent. And next thing you know, they said, perhaps it'd be better if you place this elsewhere.
And did they essentially say that, you know, there's no point pointing the finger and point, you know, having any kind of blame?
A short while after Lancet declined this, the daughter journal called Lancet Infectious Diseases had an editorial that said, blame is unhelpful. Blame in respect to identifying who started cholera in Haiti is unhelpful. We turned and said, well, that it may be true, but who is it unhelpful to? It's certainly not unhelpful to the Haitian people who would like to know exactly how this happened. It was certainly not unhelpful to epidemiologists who need to try to figure out control strategies and hopefully elimination strategies. But somehow or another, it was unhelpful, we agree, to the UN. And why the Lancet Infectious Diseases, this prestigious daughter journal to the great Lancet Journal, why they would come out with such an opinion was puzzling to us. And eventually, now about 4.5 years later, when everything became clear about what happened, what took place, and so forth, we sent a letter into the Lancet Infectious Diseases, which they published, which voiced our discontent with their original editorial.
So how did Haitians suffer from this cover-up? I mean, one might say, all right, even if one agreed with, fine, if you think laying blame is unhelpful, that's only okay in as much as that decision doesn't make the situation worse. But did the refusal to accept blame worsen Haiti's cholera epidemic?
Renaud Perot, fairly early in the epidemic, had some thoughts about how to eliminate the disease. But the UN and CDC and others were much more interested in a $2.1 billion sanitation and water project, which they couldn't get funded. And they were more interested in a mass vaccination program, which is slowly now getting underway, but they're having a hard time getting sufficient vaccine and getting funding that costs around $5 to $6 per double dose of the vaccine. So these campaigns are underway, and they believe in the value of these, but these are stretching out into longer periods of time. Perot feels is that if you start with a less costly campaign, an elimination campaign, following the strategies that he's put forward, that cholera could have been eliminated from the country. You may not have great water. You may not have great sanitation facilities, like all the other things that they expected other countries to help them pay for in Haiti. But at least the big scourge, the cholera scourge, would be out of the country.
So what could, can you tell us some of those recommendations? I mean, it sounds as though the UN wanted to take a very broad approach. Well, let's, rather than focusing on one part of the problem, we want to just solve the whole thing. But if solving cholera was the goal, what did Renaud Perot suggest could have been done, if not vaccinating people individually?
Well, he did do it. He did do it. And it starts with a surveillance system. And with the surveillance system, his belief is that cholera cannot exist in Haiti independent of human amplification. That the cholera bacteria has to be in humans and has to be amplified in humans.
And actually, can you explain, even step back and explain sort of from a microbiology perspective, because I think this is important and interesting. How does the cholera disease spread?
Cholera is an organism that has about 200 varieties, and they're all called Vibrio cholerae. And so that confuses people. Only two of them, however, cause disease, and those are the ones that produce a toxin. And the toxin, or the toxigenic cholera, is the one that if you happen to swallow the bacteria, that when it's in your stomach, it gives you an urge to throw up, and you may have fluid loss that way. Or if it gets into your intestine, then you may have an urge for diarrhea, and again, you have explosive, get fluid loss. And if that fluid is not replenished, either through intravenous means or through, some salt solutions that people take typically who have severe diarrhea, then the individual gets rapidly dehydrated and many die. And that's what happened with early in the epidemic in Haiti. So if you believe that humans are essential for bringing this disease to Haiti, then as Renaud had found, is that if human transmission can be controlled, can be reduced and eliminated, then eventually the organism flushes out of the Haitian system and there's no more cholera.
So
And
does
this is
that
what's
mean
happened.
removing the Nepal contingent of the UN immediately?
No, you have to remove the patients. You have to,
All
when
the patients.
individuals down with cholera, you have to come in, find them quickly, treat them quickly, give them chlorine tablets to use for the water and so forth in their immediate surrounding and all. Give them some health education about ways to stop it. So it's like a huge raging a brush fire in which you put out small fires here, small fires there. Each time a small fire comes up, you quickly put it out, and eventually then the inferno stops. And this type of strategy has been used with other diseases. They did the same thing with Ebola, is that they went after each Ebola case and dealt with each Ebola, and eventually the epidemic was put out. So it's not a totally new strategy. But the trouble is, in this case, the people that believe that this is some kind of environmental organism that sprung forward and all are putting forward a vaccination campaign as the only approach because it's always going to potentially spring upon you. And they're putting forward this huge sanitation and water program because they say, that you're going to be forever vulnerable to this disease. There's no way to get rid of it. And so the only thing that you can do is to clean up your water and your environment. And we're saying that's not the case.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Ralph, for joining us today. Ralph Frericks is a professor emeritus of epidemiology at UCLA. We've been talking about his book, Deadly River Cholera and Cover Up in Post-Earthquake Haiti. We're going to keep Ralph on for an extended version of this interview that you can find in the subscription section of our website, risingupwithsonali.com. So, Ralph, let's talk about where the disease is today. What is the status of cholera in Haiti today? The earthquake hit in 2010. 9 months later, the disease hit. So we're talking about a while ago. Is cholera still actively spreading in Haiti?
It's still in Haiti, and some people are saying that it's now endemic in Haiti. We don't believe that. We believe that it's spreading at a low level from individual to individual,
And what's the
and that
difference between
Renaud.
endemic and epidemic, by the way?
Endemic means that it's always there. Epidemic means that it's there in a clear excess. And so when you say that something is an epidemic disease, it means all of a sudden it's come forward and it's far greater in frequency than normal. And endemic means it's just kind of simmering there at a lower level and it remains there, but not at an excessive level.
So the disease continues to be there, and are you saying that the United Nations and all of these agencies that should have been taking steps are still refusing to take the advice of Renaud, Perot, and specifically focus on cholera?
Well, he's been very specific about the origin, and so here it is that the UN was involved. The UN has denied that they were involved in the origin. They have refused to even say they're sorry to the Haitian people and to take any responsibility for this. And like I say, there are human rights groups and so forth that are suing the UN, trying to get some kind of compensation for the Haitian people for all of this. So the UN, in stepping back, I think that they favor much more the environmental theory, and they favor the idea that somehow or another we're going to put out a request for mass vaccination and the sanitation and sewage cleanup. And that if the other countries of the world, the people don't donate money to this, which they haven't, then it's their fault. It's not our fault. We've tried. We've given it our best effort. And CDC, for some reason or another, has joined into this instead of joining ranks with Renaud Perot in his plans and all that. They've kind of stuck with the idea of a vaccination program being the main thing, and they've put their support for this longer sanitation and water plan.
And how much support does Renaud Perot have in this sort of human rights community and also among other epidemiologists? I mean, is he widely sort of seen as someone that really should be taken seriously? Does his conclusion have consensus?
So the I think, well, he's published a lot on this, and so there's a lot of people that have seen his publications. And there doesn't seem to be that much support for the opposing view. But on the other hand, not everybody knows all the details of what it is that happened here. So this was one of the reasons is that I wrote to Deadly River. This was in very, very close collaboration with Renaud. So the two of us are trying to get out his point of view on what it is that took place. And then we'll see. There are members of the scientific community that feel that this environmental theory is the valid one. There's others that think the human activity theory is valid. And we think that as this book comes out, explains our point of view, people understand what has been done in Africa and other places. They see the nature of the cover-up, the obfuscations, the changes of maps and so forth that were done by some of these epidemiologists and others at some of these agencies, that they'll come around and they'll see that this that his approach is a pretty good one. He's been funded by UNICEF. UNICEF has been very progressive on this, and so they've funded his efforts so far. But what happens here is that it takes a bit of time, and that you have to be able to do it everywhere in the country. So if it turns out that some people in the country believe that vaccination is good, or some people are holding out for this big sanitation program and all, then they don't get on board. Politically, they don't get on board. And then the disease remains in those areas.
Well, then finally, let's go back to what we started out discussing, which is that this story of how the fight to eliminate a disease became so politicized to the point where the disease itself and the people who are suffering from the disease have become victims. How do we apply these lessons to other parts of the world? What are some of the lessons that we can learn from what seems to be politics getting in the way of science and human rights?
I think in this case, what you had is that you had a powerful organization, a revered organization that did wrong. And I think what surprised all of us is that what happens when an organization like that won't face up to what it is that did. And that, unfortunately, you know, if we face other situations, the UN's health agency is the World Health Organization. If the World Health Organization won't admit exactly what happened and all that, then we have some troubles. Some would call in Doctors Without Borders, or some would call in the CDC. And even the Doctors Without Borders people have criticized CDC because they refuse to admit what it is or relate what it is that happened here. So you've got how do we say on this? This is an emotional area. It's not unlike what you might have seen at the Academy Award-winning movie Spotlight. Did you happen to see Spotlight?
I did not.
But it was a story about journalists who were investigating pedophilia that occurred within the Catholic Church with priests. And eventually, you know, it got to be so big that, again, they moved this movie on it. And then the president, even in his recent correspondence dinner, had the spotlight journalists there and the spotlight people in that keeping the attention on. And there you had a revered institution, a religious institution, that felt that its reputation would be harmed if the word on this got out and they tried to stonewall the investigation. And I think it's the same way here with the UN. The UN is a revered institution. They've tried to stonewall it. And they haven't thought about the broader overview that, namely, when they don't do what they're supposed to do, or what the American organization CDC, when they don't do what they're supposed to do, people lose faith in them. And in public health, everybody has to have faith in you. If you don't have faith in the public health people, then you don't go along with what it is that they ask you to do. If they recommend that you have vaccinations, if they recommend that you have other things and such, or they recommend that you have behavior change and all that, and you all of a sudden decide that they're just a political organization that just says whatever it is that is expected of them, then you don't follow them, and we lose. We in public health lose. So it's terribly important that we get this back on track. That CDC, which is a great organization, is that whoever in the leadership is pulling them in the wrong direction, that we get this organization back on track, that we get the UN back in track. With the UN, we have an election coming up in October that they're going to come up with a new director and all that, so that'll probably help some. But the press, journalists, and others have to be asking the candidates for this directorship how they feel about the situation in cholera in Haiti. And we need to be able to put some pressure on in order for those kinds of changes to take place.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Ralph, for joining us today and spending this time with us. And best of luck to you with your book. You've got a website?
I do. The website is deadlyriver.com, and tells about the book. And for those who like to follow maps, visuals of any kind, see figures of what the characters in the book look like and the like, it's filled with over 300 illustrations that are organized by chapters. So it tells a lot about what's going on in the book.
And we'll post a link to that, deadlyriver.com. Thank you so much, Ralph.
Well, thank you. I appreciate talking to you, Sonali, and best with your show.
Thank you. Ralph R. Frericks is a professor emeritus of epidemiology at UCLA. He's been a consultant to many international organizations and agencies, including the United Nations, the WHO, USAID, and the CDC. We've been talking about his book, Deadly River, Cholera and Cover-Up in Post-Earthquake Haiti. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com.